Like so many epidemics before, the loss of so many lives began with a single microscopic organism. It's human nature to seek even the smallest comfort in reason or logic for events as catastrophic as these. But a virus doesn't choose a time or place. It doesn't hate or even care. It just happens. The Leaper virus spread among the population of Glasgow like a common cold. There was no stopping it. No cure, no vaccine. It claimed the lives of thousands in the first week.
This is the end of the world!
In an attempt to quell the outbreak, martial law was implemented, roadblocks set up, curfews enforced. The airports, seaports, and borders were closed. Scotland was placed under quarantine. The people were ordered to stay in their homes, to avoid travel, avoid contact, to sit it out and wait for help that did not come. The wall stood 30 feet high, clad in steel armor plating. It followed the line of the ancient Roman frontier 2,000 years before, spanning 80 miles east coast west, cutting Britain in half. Coastal waters were mined and patrolled. The skies were declared a no-fly zone, and orders were given to shoot down any aircraft in violation of the quarantine. The idea was simple. Nobody came out, and nobody went in. They needn't have worried about the second part.
Welcome to another episode of Couch Potato Theater here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Couch Potato Theater is the podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network dedicated to covering all those hidden gems, cult classics, and guilty pleasures that are just so good. Even though you might have the Criterion Collection or the Deluxe Blu-ray set in your library just mere inches away from your entertainment center, you love what you're watching so much, you don't even care about getting off that couch. And that, my friends, is the definition of what our show is about. I'm Kevin, your host for this special Couch Potato Theater. We here at the Fandom Podcast Network are proud to celebrate Couch Potato Theater's special presentation of Doomsday. We are both doing a retrospective and audio commentary for Couch Potato Theater presentation of our special Doomsday edition. Now, before I move on, I've got to introduce my co-host for this Couch Potato Theater, Mr. Kyle Wagner. How are you?
I'm good, but you're not Davis Grayson.
No, I'm not. He's taking the night off. He's a little busy, but you know what? We can rock it. We can do it. It was one of those things. Okay, let's start from the beginning here. This has been one of my favorite films, okay, since it came out in 2008. Doomsday, starring Rhona Mitra. And about a month ago, our fellow friend of the network, Mr. Matthew Clifton, posted on Facebook that he was watching. He's like, you know, this is like a good Couch Potato Theater. And I was like, well, yeah. And then Kyle, you were like, well, yeah.
If any movie screams Couch Potato Theater, it is Doomsday. I mean, this is the kind of movie that just represents everything that Couch Potato Theater is about. You've got that cult classic feel to it. You've got the hot lead actress. You've got some great actors in there with Bob Costas and Alexander Siddig.
Bob Hoskins, yeah.
And of course, Costas, I've got football on the brain. and of course, come on, you have zombies.
Yes. Now, this is interesting because normally most of the Couch Potato Theaters that we've done have been like 30 years older or more. And so why are we doing one that's somewhat kind of new over the last several years? This one came out in 2008. But you know what? It's so funny because even though that's almost 10 years ago, if you think about it, these movies, even less than 10 years, can still fall under that category, especially when you see them on, you know, your pay channels or your broadcast movie channels. You know, you still may have that Blu-ray sitting on the shelf, but you're still going to watch it no matter what. And this one definitely qualifies, and we'll get more into that shortly. But first, let's go ahead and do a little business here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Kyle, why don't you tell our listeners here where they can find us?
Of course. First and foremost, you can start off right on our homepage, the mothership, if you will, fpnet.podbean.com. There you can find links to all of our shows and a great archive of all of our past shows. There's some great CPTs there, a few time warps, and of course, you know, Culture Clash, Blood of Kings, all that good stuff. You can also find us via the Podbean app if you're using your one of your mobile devices, whether it's a tablet or your phone or something else. Who knows what you got out there? And of course, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and if you use Android devices, you can always use the Google Play app. Please visit our Facebook page, too, at Fandom Podcast Network. Give us a like, put in your comments. We always got new fun news bits, other things going on there. If you like what you hear and you want to put in some input, we're always welcome to your reviews, your input, your ideas. Drop us an email at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. And of course, you can follow us on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and shoot us a line on Twitter at FanPod Network. And of course, as for me on Twitter and social media, you can find me at Twitter at AKyleW and on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, where can everybody find you on the social media sites?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Here we are, Couch Potato Theater, talking about Doomsday. Now, what's funny about this is I was kind of disappointed that this movie didn't make a bigger impact, well, on pop culture as well as in the theaters. But I'm a proud owner of the copy, a digital copy as well. You'll be happy about that, but also the Blu-ray. And this is one of those films that was inspired by many others, and we'll get more into that. But I thought we'd give a quick little plot description here. So here we go. The lethal Reaper virus spreads throughout Scotland, infecting millions and killing hundreds of thousands. To contain the threat, the acting UK authorities brutally quarantine the Scotland country as it succumbs to fear and chaos. The quarantine is successful. 3 decades later, the Reaper virus violently resurfaces in London. An elite group of specialists, including Eden St. Clair, is urgently dispatched into Scotland to retrieve a cure by any means necessary. Shut off from the rest of the world, the unit must battle through a landscape that has become a walking nightmare. The director is Neil Marshall, who has a lot of really cool directing credits to his name. A very popular guy. He's done The Descent, Dog Soldiers, which is a movie I saw recently. And I know that our friends over at OzFans Radio, Maka and also Adam, they're huge fans of Dog Soldiers. Do you remember the movie Centurion 2? Did you ever see that movie?
Oh, I'm a huge fan of that movie. And of course, I got to throw into, I was a huge fan of The Descent. I saw that in the theaters, and to me, that was a horror movie that was genre changing. It was something different and really had a nice feel to it. I saw it and was like, I haven't seen anything really like this, so I really enjoyed it. But yes, I do remember Centurion as well. I really enjoyed that movie.
It looks like he also is director of the new Hellboy movie.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that. David Harbour, Stranger Things.
Yeah, exactly. Hellboy. Yeah, yeah. And then he did an episode of Westworld, Timeless. Hannibal. So he's done a lot of TV shows. He's done even Game of Thrones. He did The Watchers on the Wall and Blackwater. He's done a lot of
shows.
Yeah. Yeah. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. And to me personally, I think this is my favorite of his that I've seen so far. So I'm a big fan of his. One of the things I wanted to ask you was that, what was your first impression when you saw this film?
Well, I saw this film and it felt to me, I mean, I enjoyed it, especially filming it in Scotland like they did, seeing all that landscape. A lot of actors I really like. And I never quite understood why it didn't do well in the theaters, but I was thinking back to it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but didn't the Land of the Dead, I can't remember, one of those movies that had the John Leguizamo come out about the same time as this, and they were kind of competing against each other?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. And, the filming locations are great. They did film in Scotland, and they also did a lot of filming and production in South Africa as well, Cape Town. But yeah, it was interesting. It was like, I remember seeing this in the theater going, why isn't this getting much more love? But, you know, and of course, I'm a big fan of the cast, as well as our lead, Eden Sinclair, played by Rhona Mitra. Now, Aaron might say something like this, that if you can't get Kate Beckinsale, you get Rhona Mitra.
Without a doubt.
But I'm a huge fan of her. She's beautiful as well, but she's a talented actress, and she's been in a lot of stuff. Recently, she was in the Last Ship TV series. She was in The Strain, also Straight to Video, which I thought was a pretty fun campy sequel to Hard Target, called Hard Target 2. She played one of the hunters. She also did, in one of my favorite action series, Strike Back. She was in a season of that. Of course, she's done other films as well. She was in the Underworld prequel, Rise of the Lycans, where she played Sonya. She had a part in Shooter. And in one of my favorite underrated films called Skinwalker, she was in there as well. And then you mentioned she was in Nip Tuck, right?
Yeah, she was in season two, and I think maybe part of season three. She was a cop investigating a serial killer that was kind of a running thing for a while in that show.
One of the shows that I think I first really noticed her in, if I remember correctly, was in the series Boston Legal. Of course, that starred William Shatner. She was in that series, I think she was in for about maybe a season or two, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
She was also in The Practice, Home Sweet Alabama, Party of Five, which is what surprised me. She had a recurring character in Party of Five as Holly Marie Beggins. I don't even remember that. I remember watching Party of Five, but I didn't like do a rewatch of Party of Five.
Yeah. The other thing is, to me, with her too, is she kind of falls, I think, even a little bit in, we talked about the comparison to Kate Beckinsale, but I actually think she kind of has a little bit of a Linda Hamilton into her, because her characters are always kind of this really strong but have an edge female lead to them. It's rare you see her play the soft side.
I think my head would explode if Rhona Mitra and Kate Beckinsale starred in like a buddy cop film.
Well, okay. Question. wait, Kevin. I have an ultimate question. Rhona Mitra and Kate Beckinsale, have they ever been photographed in the same place at the same time?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, but that would be my ultimate casting. Like, or like some cool sci-fi picture where they're like some badass, like, you know, buddies, and they do something cool in space and battle aliens. That'd be kind of cool.
But yeah, you know what? We could sit here and go on for Rhona all show, but this movie actually has one amazing cast in it, Kevin.
Agreed.
Bob Hoskins. Wasn't this one of the last films he did before he kind of semi-retired because of health reasons?
I think so, yeah. I know he may have done a couple other ones, yeah. And then we have Star Trek Deep Space Nine alum here, Alexander Siddig, who also was Julian Bashir.
Yeah, and you know what? He's really developed a nice career for himself. I thought he was outstanding in Kingdom of Heaven, had a nice run on Game of Thrones as a guest appearance. He always pops up when you least expect him. I actually remember he was also in a BBC show called Prime Evil.
Oh yeah, that's right. I never did see that too. Also, David O'Hara, probably one of the best gravelly voices in the movies. You've seen this guy in a lot of stuff. He's a great character actor. He usually plays some type of kind of bad guy, or, you know, sleazy like undercover guy or something like that. He's in here as well. Of course, we have the awesome Malcolm McDowell is Kane, and of course he does the voiceover that you heard at the top of the show. And Sean Pertwee, you've seen him in a lot of stuff. He was also, I believe, in Dog Soldiers, but you've seen him in a lot of stuff.
So, and also, let's not forget, he is the son of one of the actors who played Doctor Who.
Really?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Okay. I never think of his first name, but he was the third Doctor.
Yeah. A couple other people I want to mention was Nora Jane Noon, plays a character of Reed. She's in here as well. And the main bad guy, Saul, is played by Craig Conway. He's done several things too. And then, of course, his female kind of enforcer, Leanne Liedenberg, plays Viper. She's the famous person that you see on the cover of the DVD art with all the tattoos on her face. She's also done a lot of stunt work. She's a stunt woman herself. So the running time for this film was about 113 minutes. That was the uncut version. There may have been a cut version put out there as well. And the movie was released on March 14th, 2008. And I want to talk.
I got it. I wanted to hit on that because, you know, that's an interesting time frame for that, because that was really before we had the extended of the summer movie season. And March, I think, was a place where March was kind of a place where movies that they thought they were going to put out in the summer but decided not to kind of went to die at that point.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The summer movie season starts in April now. You'll notice that's when like a lot of the Fast and Furious films started coming out. And so it's kind of hard to define. You could say the summer movie season should start in May, but it's been starting a little early for, if you look at a lot of films that have been coming out in those months. But you're right about that month of March, which is now like the Disney month. That's the month that Disney will release their live action version of films as well. For its theatrical run, the film originally intended to be distributed by Focus Features under Rogue Pictures, but the company transferred Doomsday, among other films, to Universal Pictures for larger scale distribution and marketing beginning in 2008. Doomsday was commercially released on March 14, 2008 in the United States and Canada, and just under 2,000 theaters, grossing in U.S. Just under $5 million in its opening weekend and ranked 7th at the box office. Box Office Mojo reported it as a failed opening. Its theatrical run in the United States and Canada lasted 28 days, ending on April 10th, 2008. It's funny how it says 28 days.
Yeah, 28 days later.
Yes, which I will get into a little bit more about the comparisons of the other films. And then eventually having grossed in the U.S. Just over $11 million. The film opened in the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland and Malta on May 9th, 2008, grossing a total of a little over $2 million. The film's performance in the U.K. was considered a disappointing run. The film premiered in Italy on August 2008, grossing an overall $500,000. Worldwide, Doomsday has grossed in the U.S. $22 million. The budget was $30 million estimated. So obviously it lost money, which, you know, it's funny though, because I think it did a lot better on video and has become popular. And before I go on, did you ever kind of wish that there was a sequel?
You know, I could have seen it. And I think that was the initial plan for this movie franchise, was to kind of maybe have it be a franchise for Roma Mitra, because Roma was a kind of no name at that point. She had done the Underworld film, she had done a couple other things, she was kind of up and coming. I when I go back and think about this, Kevin, and you brought it up, I think this movie was just slotted in the wrong time frame. We were kind of getting to the end of that big run of popular zombie movies like 28 Days Later, the Resident Evil films. There was a lot of Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Romero remakes about that time. But we were a few years yet before the zombie phenomenon of The Walking Dead.
Right. Yeah.
So I think this movie kind of got slotted in just the wrong time frame. I think people were kind of burned out on it. And I think if this would have come out a year sooner or later, when Walking Dead was really popular, it would have done a lot better in the theaters.
Well, I wanted to mention this point before we get into the critical response and the reviews, was that if I were to explain Doomsday to someone who doesn't know what it's about, you would say that it's like a part Escape from New York, Road Warrior, 28 Days Later. That's why I mentioned that 28 Days thing. And a little bit of kind of Braveheart slash kind of Excalibur-y type thing, you know? And a lot of people will say that same thing, but in a negative way. Oh, they're just ripping off so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. Well, no. If you listen to the audio commentary and read up on it, Neil Marshall actually is a huge fan of all those films and was inspired by them and wanted to kind of throw a little homage to these films and kind of bring it all together in a kind of futuristic sci-fi thriller. Regarding the critical responses, the director of Rotten Tomatoes gave it 50%, okay? And you'll kind of notice that's a similar theme among all of the other critical responses. The director, of course, of The Descent and Dog Soldiers was given more money for his latest effort, but many thought he wasted it on a collection of flashy set pieces without much interlinking plot in between. I completely disagree with that. Rotten Tomatoes on UK's general consensus, Doomsday was not screened for critics in advance of its commercial opening in cinemas. The film received mixed reviews. Rotten Tomatoes reported that 50% of its critics gave the film positive write-ups. based on a sample of 68 with an average score of 5.2 out of 10. The website's consensus reads, Doomsday is a pale imitation of previous futuristic thrillers, minus the cohesive narrative and charismatic leads. Metacritic, which assigns a normalized rating of 100 to reviews from mainstream critics, the film has received an average of a score of 51 based on 14 reviews. What is your take on these reviews, Kyle?
You know, realistically, I think that sounds pretty much for the average. I probably would have ranked this movie a little bit higher, but when I go back and watch this, I can understand why it got some of those reviews. I think a lot of people didn't get what Neil Marshall was trying to do. I think this was meant to be an homage movie to films Neil Marshall was a fan of and had a great influence on him. And people just didn't get that.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. Yeah. Yeah. I think they're a little unfair on these. I can see why they said it, but I don't think, honestly, I think a lot of these movie critics, and especially a lot over on Rotten Tomatoes, have kind of forgotten how to enjoy the theatrical experience and just enjoy movies. They're always willing to find the flaws first and then just kind of, you know, jump on that bandwagon first. One thing I wanted to mention was the Scottish response, because this film is basically about quarantining the whole country of Scotland. And of course, there's been some historical strife between both Scotland and the UK. Currently, there still is. The Scottish Tourism Agency Visit Scotland welcomed Doomsday, hoping that the film would attract tourism by marketing Scotland to the rest of the world. The country's national body for film and television, Scottish Screen, had contributed over about £300 to the production of Doomsday, which provided economic benefits for the cast and crew who dwelt in Scotland. A spokesman from the Scottish Screen anticipated it's likely to also attract a big audience who will see the extent to which Scotland can provide a flexible and diverse backdrop to all genres of film. In contrast, several parties have expressed concern that Doomsday presents negativity in England's latent view of Scotland based on their history. This is very interesting because, the complimentary part of it, the people are thinking about Scotland as we are moving more and more towards independence, but the film depicts a country that is still the plaything of London. It is decisions made in London that has led to becoming a quarantine zone. What's your take on that, Kyle?
Well, you know, I find that very interesting, first of all, because you rarely hear about a country giving a movie money just because they think it's going to be good for tourism. And I really thought, you know, when you watch this film, that's one of the most breathtaking things about it is the landscape and everything they show. I mean, the castle that you see in the film, which we will get to when we discuss the commentary. I almost feel bad because I think I remember when this came out, that was a big pushing point for it, was being in Scotland and everything like that. And when the movie kind of just failed, I think it really kind of put a hit on Scotland being open to more films being U.S. films being made there. And I kind of wonder if that hasn't had a little bit of an effect on one of the reasons why we maybe delayed Highlander being made.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah. One of the things I want to mention about the character that I think should be mentioned in this retrospective, the main character of Eden Sinclair, played by Rhona Mitra, because I do have it playing in the background right now, was that she was in Scotland at the time that this quarantine was getting ready to happen, and they were building the big wall around the country. Her character as a toddler, was, I think, shot in the eye. And so as she grows older and you see her older, she's got this really cool electronic eye that she can actually pop out and use it as a camera. And when you listen to the audio commentary, which I did, it was kind of a little homage to Snake Plissken. And there's a scene in the beginning of the film, which we'll talk about in the audio commentary, that she is they're looking for these terrorists, I believe, or these human traffickers, and she's actually wearing a patch over her eye. But later in the film, the eye is more, because of technology, looks more realistic, so she doesn't have to wear the patch, and she can use her real eye. But I always thought that was a cool little thing about the film, was that it was kind of like reminding me of, which was it? Was it the $6 million man that had the special eye? That was one of the things he had to have replaced.
I think so, but it's been so long, and there's been so many.
I know the bionic woman had the ear. She had the bionic ear. So, that's one thing I wanted to mention about her character, because that's one of the cool things that they utilize that in the film. Now, the opening of the film and your first reaction to it. Did you see it in the theater, by the way, Kyle?
No, actually, I missed it in the theater. You can kind of guess by the release date why that was a little hard for me to get to in the theater at the time.
Are you busy doing some taxi stuff?
Yeah, something like that. But I did, when it came out on DVD, actually one I went out and purchased fairly quickly because I did want to see it. And I talked to several of my friends who saw it in the theater, and they said they really enjoyed it. And I put it in, and, you know, I did it. I enjoyed the film. It very much came across to me as, you know, what I expected it to be, a kind of a zombie movie, but it had a lot of other flares to it. And one of the things I always liked about this film was the fact that they mixed technology in with old school kind of Road Warrior feel to it.
Right. Right.
And one of the things too, and I think this is kind of interesting, was this movie had a particularly interesting soundtrack, my friend.
Yes. Yes. And we'll definitely get into that a little bit more in the composer as well, because there's some cool songs in there. One thing I want to mention too, was that we've been talking about how there's an homage to several different films here. There's a scene in the film where the special unit goes through the wall, and they're going in because the reason why they're going back into Scotland is because there's signs of life, and they think that there is a way to get a cure by going in there and see if they can get some blood samples and see what they can do there. There's a great scene where they get in that armored personnel unit, and they're going into the town, and, you know, and they're trying to find some survivors and stuff. That scene was actually a direct homage to the movie Aliens, where the space marines land on the planet, and they go into, where they're trying to find the colonists and stuff. So that was another thing that was inspired by another movie that was inspired the filmmaker. So regarding the home video formats here, it was originally released on Blu-ray by Universal Pictures. And it says that after the studio's initial support of the now folded HD DVD format, remember those?
Oh, yeah.
The unrated version was released on DVD and Blu-ray on July 29th, 2008 in the United States, containing an audio commentary and bonus materials covering the film's post-apocalyptic scenario, visual effects, and destructive vehicles and weapons assessed in the unrated DVD's video was quality writing, and for the most part, it's a crisp disc that leaps above standard definition. The audio quality was considered up to par with the film's loud scenes, though IGN found volume irregularly between the loud scenes and at the quiet scenes. And it also sound the most, it says it found the most fascinating featurette to be is about the visual effects, while deeming the other featurettes skippable. I liked the audio commentary. It was very informative, and I definitely recommend that. I don't think it had a lot of other great audio or special features on it as well, but it was, you know, for a release, I was fine with it. What about you? You got it on video first?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I thought the commentary was solid. But, you know, at the time when this came out, we were still kind of getting the basic cookie cutter DVD extras.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Peter Jackson kind of changed the game on that one.
Yes. Yes. okay. Well, you touched briefly on the music and the soundtracks. Let's talk about the soundtrack. Songs on there, we have Dog Eat Dog, written by Adam Ant, performed by Adam and the Ants. Of course, one of the more famous scenes, Good Thing, by the Fine Young Cannibals. I think that was a scene where they had captured one of the guys and they're getting ready to basically cook him and cannibalize him. Mm-hmm. We also have Spellbound, which is a song by Susie and the Banshees. Two Tribes by Frankie Goes to Hollywood. And of course, Clubfoot by Kasabian, which is a really cool song. And then we have the composer, Tyler Bates. Now, I'm a big fan of this guy. Do you know why?
Refresh my memory, my friend.
Well, he's done great soundtracks such as Guardians of the Galaxy, Watchmen, 300, and John Wick.
Well, there we go. And when you had, you should have just went right to John Wick.
And I'm not done though. He's also doing the soundtrack for the Punisher TV series.
Nice, nice. Can't wait for that.
And I guess there's another stuff he's done too is Kingdom, Samurai Jack. Did you hear that, Matt?
Oh, yeah.
Samurai Jack. of course, he's done both Guardians of the Galaxies. He does Salem. He did the Belko experiment as well. Californication, he did a bunch there as well. So this guy's done a lot of TV stuff, but he's jumped on and done a lot of really popular films. I think he's probably one of those guys that I would say is in the top five composers right now. And he's also a really good musician himself. And I think he's high in demand. I mean, he's not your John Williams, of course, or a lot of these other big ones as well. But I think he's falling into one of those really one of those composers that's on demand. What'd you think of his work?
Well, I mean, you look at that body of work alone, and yeah, those are all amazing films. And I think he is one of those guys. Obviously, he's not a legend like John Williams, but I think he's one of those guys that Hollywood will turn to without hesitation.
What I'm wondering is if Chad Stahelski, who has asked him to do the Wick films, is if he's going to have him back on Highlander, or if Chad Stahelski is going to be doing a different approach on that. So I'm really curious about that. Well, yeah.
Now, Kevin, one of the things that I really loved about this movie were the effects.
Yes. Visual specs. Now, one of the more famous scenes was when they find the Bentley.
Oh, God, I love that car.
Now, this chase scene was actually filmed in South Africa, Cape Town. And that's where a lot of the film sets were as well. And the Bentley was filmed crashing through the bus without the use of pyrotechnics due to fire hazards, but the visual effects were later added to show the explosion. Let me do a little blurb on this here. The visual effects for Doomsday stemmed from the 1980 stunt-based films involving approximately 275 visual effects shots. While filmmakers did not seek innovative visual effects, they worked with the budget restrictions by creating set extensions. With most shots taking place in daylight, the extensions involved matte paint and 2D and 3D solutions. The visual effects crew visited Scotland to take reference photos, so scenes that were filmed in Cape Town, South Africa, could instead have Scottish backgrounds. Several challenges for the visual effects crew included the illustration of cow overpopulation in line with the decimated human population and the convincing creation of the rebuilt Hadrian Wall in the different lights and from different distances. The most challenging visual effects shot in Doomsday were the close-up in which a main character is burned alive. The shot required multiple enhancements and implementations of burning wardrobe, burning pig skin, and smoke and fire elements to look authentic. Neil Marshall's car chase sequence also involved the use of visual effects. A scene in which the Bentley crashes through the bus was intended to implement pyrotechnics, but fire marshals in South Africa Nature Preserve, the filming location for the scene, forbade their use due to the dry conditions. A miniature mock-up was recreated and visual effects were applied so the filming of the mock-up would overlay the filming of the actual scene without pyrotechnics. Other visual effects that were created were the Thames floodplain and the remote Scottish castle. A popular effect with the visual effects crew was the rabbit explosion scene, depicting a rabbit being shot by guns on automated sensors. The crew sought to expand the singular shot, but Neil Marshall sought to focus on the shot to emphasize its coming nature and avoid drawing unnecessary sympathy from audiences. What's your take on the rest of those effects?
Oh, I think that was a standout point in this film was the effects. Also, I want to add into there the action, the fight sequences. This movie was choreographed very well. That Bentley, anything to do with that Bentley, I was in. I wanted to take that car home. I was hoping Roma would drive it right up to my driveway. But with that, I might have been in a fever dream. I don't know, but...
Yeah, I think if I remember in the trivia, we might touch on this later, but they had, I think... only two or three cars to use, and they were really surprised how much punishment those Bentleys put up.
They were so built that like was really tanks.
Cool. regarding the filming locations, blackness Blackness Castle and Blackness, Fall Creek, West Lothian, Scotland. Dune, Stirling, Scotland, UK. Loch Katrine, Stirling, Scotland, UK. Glasgow, of course. And then there's several other ones here in London and Scotland. And then, of course, several Cape Town, South Africa locations as well. And then some studios in England. St. Paul's Cathedral in London, the Tower Bridge in London, and a lot more in South Africa. So I thought it was kind of interesting that even though it takes place in London in Scotland, that they were able to go to South Africa and recreate some of these locations and also do a lot of filming there. I've noticed there's a lot of films located being filmed in South Africa. I don't know if it has to do with tax breaks or, you know, the huge film community down there now. I know the Dread film was filmed down there as well. There's a lot of films filming in South Africa. Did you know that?
Yeah, well, South Africa's got such a varied ground to it, varied landscape. They can do a lot of different things in South Africa.
Yeah, and the one TV series that I mentioned called Strike Back that I like, where Rona Mitra guested on a season, that first few seasons was filmed in South Africa as well. And they have a lot of different like topography and stuff like that that can double for other cities as well, which I've noticed. I know that movie. I remember that movie Safe House with Ryan Reynolds. That was filmed entirely down there as well. So, and of course, you know, the Neil Blomkamp films were filmed down there as well. So very, very popular filming location there. Was there anything about the filming locations or the sets that kind of stood out for you, Kyle?
I go back and I mentioned it earlier when they were using the castles.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just how they used them, what they were for was great. And I mean, just all the scenes of the car chase, just that landscape around there was so well done. I mean, this movie has just got so many little things. And I think agree with you, Kevin. It's just so underappreciated.
I agree. One of the things I want to mention was, I forgot which friend of mine that said it, but I remember I posted on Facebook that I was watching this and someone said, I really like that film, but it seems like they just threw in all these genres that everyone likes, you know, and I'm like, that's not a bad thing, but especially because I think if you were to pick one part of this film that seems out of place is when they escape the kind of Mad Max type cannibalistic people. They come across this kind of, you know, Braveheart, King Arthur castle type setting, and they're all in armor, they're all in on the horseback, and then there's like a arena there with this big warrior that Rona Mitra's character has to fight. So I could kind of see why people are saying that, but it was also very fun to watch. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think this is one of those movies, it's not for everybody. But I think if you're a fan of action movies, of science fiction, everything, it's a fun hodgepodge. And I think this is one of these movies that you go in and you take it at face value. Don't try to look for a deeper meaning because you're going to be disappointed. You just go in and enjoy. This is a movie that Neil Marshall just said, I'm going to have fun and make a movie. And that was it. There was not meant to be anything else behind this film.
Yeah, and he's a big student of film as well, so you can definitely see the homages to all the other films he likes. I thought we hit on some trivia here. As I mentioned before, the car featured in the chase scene was a 2008 Bentley Continental GT Speed. Bentley does not participate in product placement, so the film producers purchased three of these cars for approximately $150,000 each.
Well, they're half their budget right there.
Yeah, I know. One car was mistakenly driven into a gorge. The second was used for the lion's share of stunt shots, and the filmmakers were astonished at how durable the car was despite the punishment it took. By the time filming concluded, the car only needed a cosmetic refit. Its frame and engine were all intact. Now, you remember this scene. This is probably the one that really felt like a Road Warrior homage. And you have mentioned it's one of your favorite scenes, but apparently that those Bentleys took a beating and kept on ticking.
Hey, yeah, you know what? Makes me say, if I ever win the lottery, I'm going to go buy a Bentley.
Despite having many dangerous choreographed stunts, only two went wrong. A motorcycle rider was dragged when he meant to roll safely aside. He was not injured. Now, this is funny because I remember this scene. Remember the scene in the film where they escape from Saul and the cannibalistic Road Warrior type humans on that train. And then Saul gets mad and like punches one of the guys next to him. He says, another was the man whom Saul punches in the face on the train platform. On a second take of the scene, the stuntman's nose is broken.
Oops.
This is something I wanted to mention too, as I touched on. When Sinclair and her troops first go over the wall into Glasgow and explore the deserted streets right before they attacked, the scene plays homage to James Cameron's 1986 film Aliens. Both sets of troops ride around in an APC, armored personnel carrier, and they get even similar lines of dialogue when checking for the possible ambush, like, check those corners. though the film takes place in Scotland, in London and Scotland, most of the principal photography was done in South Africa. The last scene shot on the continent before moving to the UK was the lengthy car chase with the Bentley crashing into the through the bus. Now, when I read this piece of trivia, this reminded me of something that I remember from the original Raiders of the Lost Ark film. And a lot of movies will tend to, when they shoot out of sequence, they will wait for the most dangerous stunts to do last sometimes, so that, you know, in case anyone is injured and stuff, they have all the important scenes filmed. Do you remember what scene? It's a little trivia for you here. What scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark was one of the last ones that was shot?
If I remember correctly, wasn't it the car scene with Harris, with Indiana Jones, where he's hanging on the front of the car?
Oh, you mean the big truck chase scene?
Yeah, the big truck chase scene.
No, it was not. The scene that was shot last was the scene that took place in Cairo, where Marion was abducted and put into the truck.
Yeah.
And then the truck takes off, and then Indy shoots the driver and the gunman, and the truck falls over and explodes. Mm-hmm. That was one of the last shots that was one of the last scenes that was shot. Okay, here's something interesting I didn't know about. The film was made into a haunted house at Universal's Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando, Florida. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, because I was actually at that Horror Nights and
really
that year. Yeah, it was quite interesting. If you've never been to a Halloween Horror Nights, it basically they close the Universal Studios about 6 o'clock, and they take about an hour to convert it over to Horror Nights. You go in, there's usually like 6 to 8 haunted houses, all themed, and you got to try to hit as many as you can, because as the later it gets later in the night, the more crowded the park gets. But I did go to the year that Doomsday was one of them, and it was a lot of fun. I think for me, though, the one thing about Horror Nights is once you go once, you've kind of been. But if I remember correctly, Doomsday was one of them. I think there was an American Werewolf in London haunted house that year as well. So, but yeah, I do remember that.
But it was a lot of fun. You enjoyed it?
Yeah, if you go with a big group of people, it's a lot of fun.
That's cool. The assault weapons used by the DDS troopers were modified Vector CR-21 bullpup assault rifles, a product of South Africa, the major filming location of the film. Being a weapons guy myself, I recognize those weapons, and they have a very distinctive look. They've got the curved clip behind the handle and the trigger. And what's also, too, is it was one of my favorite weapons to use in some of the Call of Duty video games. Because they had a good fire rate on them, so I liked them. Let me see here. A couple other cool things. The character of Canaris, which was the guy that I mentioned earlier, played by David O'Hara. He's got that really gravelly voice. And, you know, real quick, I want to mention his IMDb stuff here, because I'm sure you might recognize his stuff. He tends to kind of look differently a lot, but you may remember him in The Departed. He played one of the Irish gangsters. He was in Wanted. He was in Braveheart, Hotel Rwanda. He also was Alistair Fitz in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Remember him?
Really?
Yes. Do you remember that character? Because I don't remember that character. Do you?
Yeah, I do remember that character. He's one of these actors that you forget how much stuff he's in. Because
Exactly. He was in Cowboys.
He's like, you're like, oh, that guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was in Gotham for a couple of episodes. This guy's done a lot of stuff. But what's interesting about his character is that the character of Canaris was probably named after the German spy master during World War II. While most of his duties were in line with the official Nazi party line, he was known to run some operations for his own purposes. I'm really curious about that character in history now. I got to look that guy up. So there's a little bit of trivia there for you. You know, like I said, this is one of those films that definitely falls under the category for our couch potato theater. I have watched this like on our, I remember getting like free HBO months ago and it was on. I was watching it. Could have put the DVD in there. I didn't. Was there any other particular characters for you that stood out that you really liked?
You know, to me, it was one of these things where all the characters are so unique and an aspect of, yeah, you had your tropes in this, but there was something about each character that had something to them besides just being the cookie cutter type character. And I think it's a lot because of the quality of actors you had playing in this movie. But, you know, I look at this and you talk about being a perfect couch potato theater movie. Doomsday to me is one of these movies too. It gets a lot of play. It goes into that cable circulation every now and then, especially on like FX. And it's one of those movies you come across it and you just kind of leave it on while you're doing other stuff. It's a great background, or, hey, I just stumbled upon this on cable. I'm going to watch what you could be halfway through it. And you'd be like, nope, I'm going to sit and watch Doomsday. Yeah. So I that makes it a great couch potato theater film.
I really like the bad guy, Saul. He's got this cool mohawk and he doesn't wear a shirt. He's got these tattoos. And I have it playing on the background here. And there's a scene that that also has a little, I'm going to guess maybe a tiny homage to Pulp Fiction, because there's a scene where he's captured Sinclair and she's hanging by her wrists in the jail cell. And off in the corner, there's a gimp guy that's dressed in leather.
I remember that.
But there's the.
I was sure that wasn't Channing Tatum.
Yeah, Channing Tatum. Nice reference.
I'm thinking anytime it's a gimp now, it's Channing Tatum.
Yeah. What was that? What was the name of that movie?
This is the End. That was Danny McBride.
That's right. and there's some really memorable characters. Of course, the main. Henchwoman to Saul. She's got that really cool kind of hair and the tattooed face, but she was dispensed quickly, of course, by Rhona Mitra, which was interesting. I just love the look of this film. I notice something different every time I watch it. I highly recommend this film. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, go check it out. Please do. It's a lot of fun, and take it as from the point of view that someone's making this film because they love, they're a film student, they love films, and they're kind of putting an homage to all these other films that they like. And to be honest with you, if I were to make my own film, I would do the same thing. I would say, you know what? I really love the scene of this film, or I love this look. I would probably throw something in there that would kind of do a little throwback to that. Let me ask you this, Kyle. What are your current personal reflections of the movie now? Does it hold up to you for you right now?
I think it does in certain aspects. I think it holds up as just a fun action film, science fiction type film. Obviously, you know, 2008, I mean, you talk about 10 years already, just seeing types of effects and things like that. But I think one of the things that makes this hold up so well was Neil Marshall used a lot of practical effects in this film.
Agreed. Yep.
And I think when you use those practical effects, those two movies tend to hold up a lot more than movies that were very, very heavily based on digital effects or the such. You know, a perfect example I can give of that is, you know, we just did our Star Trek Discovery special where we talk about how, you know, the Star Trek effects have changed so much over the years and it kind of throws you off, where with a movie like this, realistically, you could put this on at just about any time and it's going to hold up.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, it's interesting too, because when you watch the film, you find out that the Reaper virus happens in Scotland in 2008, coincidentally when the film comes out, but then it jumps 30 years later to 2035. And I thought they did a pretty good job of capturing the future and what happens. And, you know, what I liked about this, the plot of this, and anyone that dogs this movie for the plot, I don't think is paying attention to it. I think it has a great plot. I like the fact that usually in all of these zombie films, you get this mass kind of worldwide infection. and people are trying to survive that. I like the fact that it was, you know, quarantined to one country. And, you know, even though it was Scotland, because if you listen to Bloody Kings, the Highlander podcast, you know that both Norm and I have been to Scotland. Norm went this year. I went last year. And also recently, and we both agree with this, that Scotland's voted as one of the most – voted the most beautiful country in the world. And I can attest to that. Norm can attest to that. I'm going to go again next year. I love this country. And it's just so funny how – they turn it into this wasteland. But that's what's interesting about it. You take the most beautiful country in the world and you turn it into a zombie infested road worry type, you know, country. So Kyle, when are you going to get your butt to Scotland?
Working on it. You know, I'm trying to get a few other bucket list items taken care of, but yeah, it is definitely on the list. And hopefully, I'm hoping within the next 2 to 3 years that is going to be a trip I'm going to get to take. I will be getting the map from you.
There you go. The map that has traveled, yes. Would you recommend this to friends?
This is one of those kind of movies that you recommend to the friend, to certain types of friends. The friends you know who, you don't recommend this film to everybody. This is not a film that
really
can go across
okay
the board.
All right. What type of friend would you recommend it to?
This would be the kind of friend I would recommend to somebody who is a fan of action films and a fan of the sci-fi genre. This is not something I would necessarily recommend to, you know, somebody who's a kind of a casual moviegoer. You know, this is one of those things. If you know it's somebody who is into this kind of genre and hasn't seen this film, you would recommend it. I don't know if I'd just recommend this to somebody who I thought was just a casual moviegoer, because I think somebody who is more of a movie goer and into these kind of films is going to appreciate what Neil Marshall was trying to do with this film.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah. Personally, I would recommend it to everyone. I might get mixed reviews, of course, but I see the type of audience, but I think the podcast that we put out for these type of shows, I think we have an audience that would definitely give this, this movie a shot. Let me ask you this. If it were successful, and if a sequel was greenlit, of course, we're probably not going to see it. What would you have liked to have seen from a sequel?
You know, I think it would have been interesting to see more of Roma Mitra's character, maybe even outside of that world, getting more integrated into things, kind of seeing how she would react to the rest of the world and what other functions she might have in the rest of the world. The thing with Doomsday would have been a more of a spinoff of that Roma Mitra's character than anything else.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That would have been kind of cool. I mean, it would be interesting to see like the after effects of, you know, if they did use this cure, because at the end of the film, they get the blood sample, they get the person that they need, but you don't really see it followed through. And you kind of wonder if there's some other nefarious means behind it. Do you think this movie would have also made maybe a good television series to kind of explore that a little bit more?
Well, I think if we had this movie now, this is the kind of movie that I could have easily seen gone to Netflix or Amazon or even Hulu, where they do an original series on one of those formats.
Right. Yeah.
I don't see a major network, maybe FX doing something with it, but I don't see a major network really doing something with this. I think this would have to, again, be found in that niche. You could even say Sci-Fi Network could do something with this.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think we've given a pretty good argument of why this falls under the couch potato theater programming here. This is a film that even though we own it, we'd still watch it. Do you have an issue with it only being almost 10 years old, or do you think that it's been long enough?
Well, no, because here's my feeling about Couch Potato. To me, it could even be a movie that was just a couple of years old. There's a certain feel to a movie that makes it a Couch Potato Theater movie. And age isn't necessarily a factor. It's about what the movie represents, what you feel about it, place and time. I can think of another recent movie that, to me, screams a Couch Potato Theater movie, and that is the movie Attack the Block. That movie is not that old, but yeah, that feels like a couch potato theater kind of film.
Okay. Good. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. I think even newer, newer movies, if it's got a, well, let's be honest, the movie has to have some rewatchability, of course.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm not going to put in like, you know, Sense and Sensibility or something like that, you know, as a couch potato theater, you know? But I think Attack the Block and several other type films would fall under that category. Well, as we wrap this up, do you have any final thoughts? Anything else you'd like to say about Doomsday?
Roma Mitra can kick my butt anytime she wants.
She definitely does a good action role character. What else? Yes.
Again, if you're just a fan of the action movie genre and you're looking for a movie to pop in the afternoon, just sit back, relax, enjoy what's on your screen, Doomsday is a perfect movie for that. Grab your popcorn, grab your potato chips, get your butt on the couch and be a couch potato. Because this is what couch potato theater is all about. And Doomsday is a perfect couch potato movie. So go enjoy it. Go get on Blu-ray. Go find it on iTunes. Whatever your source is, go see Doomsday.
Well said. I agree with everything that you just said. I would like for our listeners to also, when they do watch this, check out what they do have the special features. Also, listen to the audio commentary, because there's a lot of really interesting stuff that they say in the production of this film. One thing I wanted to mention too was that I think this film, as dark as it is, it still found its humor. There were some funny parts in it that I liked. But man, I got to tell you, back to Rona Mitra, she looks great in this film. I love that kind of like weird kind of offcut like Bob haircut that she has and tight clothing that she wears. I mean,
no offense to the ladies out there. You know, we always love you and you're always welcome, but we are guys here. So,
she's just beautiful in this. And the other thing I like about her is that she kicks major butt. I mean, you know, especially when it comes to that, that medieval dress type character, she has to fight him. And you know, she's the commander of this unit, and she does that well. I think this is one of those films that I think for her, I wish kind of would have shot her into like the A-list celebrity group. Unfortunately, she's not in that group, but which is too bad. I like to see her do more stuff. And I think she's a great actress. So, you know, I highly recommend this film. Please check it out. Well, here on the Fandom Podcast Network, before we go, we want to remind you of some other programs that we have. We have Culture Clash, the weekly fandom show that you, Kyle, and I, we co-host. We got a lot of, we talk about the newest movies, newest hot button topics in our geek fandom. We have also some great segments on that show. We've got the Magic 8-Ball. I've got my DVD vault. We're going to have a Orville special as well, and keep you, you know, Norm's going to be on occasionally talking Star Trek from Star Trek series. Speaking of Norm, he's also my co-host for our Highlander Blood of Kings podcast. We got a lot of really cool stuff if you're a Highlander fan there, so please check that out. Of course, we have other great couch potato theater episodes as well. Make sure you check out our catalog on that. We also have Time Warp, and this year we've been doing 1987, the movies, 30 years later. We also have the Alfred Hitchcock podcast, Good Evening, with your host Tom, Brandon, and Chris. And Kyle, we also have The End Zone. We are now weekly, of course, for the football season. We cover all the newest football news, including the last week's recap, and look forward to the next week, up and through the Super Bowl. Kyle, first of all, I want to say thank you very much for co-hosting this with me, man. I want to give a shout out to Matt again. He had posted it on Facebook. He was watching it. He suggested this would make a good couch potato theater, and I wanted to thank him for that.
Yeah, no, definitely thank you, Matt. You always throw out some good ideas, and this has been a lot of fun. This is one of those movies that you just kind of have fun with, and it's always fun doing these kind of things with you, Kevin. And it's a blast, and it's what the Fandom Podcast Network and especially Couch Potato Theater is all about.
Exactly. Well, join us next. We're going to do the audio commentary. Again, I'd like to thank my co-host Kyle Wagner, and I'm Kevin. Until next time, I will see you on the couch. Thank you.